Welcome to the Mock Stars Podcast, the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper, the 23 crisp flavors, the nectar of the gods. Drink two and you've achieved limitless pill status. Expand your neural pathways. I am Menace, one of your hosts, and I'm flying solo today. Flash is out of the office. So we're doing something that, I'm a bit of an expert at, and that is breaking down one of the most slept on, exciting Naya commanders in CDH. And now that the bans have sort of, have made it a little bit more viable, we are talking about Shalai and Halar. And a few people at MagicCon got to experience the devastating nature of the deck. So we're going to talk about it today. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so by finding us on YouTube, where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. You can also support us on all major podcasting platforms, where you can leave us a 5-star review and make us look super duper cool. And you can also support us on Patreon, where you can become an official Pepperhead for $3 a month, get access to our bi-weekly giveaway. You can also become a Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead like Will Rule, K Mr. K, UWP Quirt, D Mun 82, Tommy Cypher, Jacob Hibbard, The Boogie Ghost, Cool Boy Barry, Draw for Turn, KB, maybe Jeremy, maybe Anthony. Thank you all so much for your support. By becoming a Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead, you get 2 entries into each of our bi-weekly giveaways. And we've got our Cherry Pepper Vanilla Head, Revenlift, hanging out in the Mock Stars Dr. Pepper Lounge. No idea who's in there this week. It was a mystery. They wouldn't let me peep at the list. Vin Diesel and all them wearing gears in his mouth. Just, I couldn't understand what he was saying. I don't know, man. It just got to me. And usually I got Flash behind me, like backing me up. And, you know, I got courage when Flash is there. But, nah, man, this week I was scared. I don't know what was going on, but hey, that lounge, man, it's a magical place. Thank you, Revenlift, for all your support. We surely do appreciate it. Let's get into the news. This week in Magic News, we have an announcement. The full deck list for the Secret Lair Commander Deck 20 Ways to Win has been revealed. And while there are quite a few really cool, like, Tanuki flavored cards, honestly, the deck list is so trash that I do not know how this made it through, like, R&D, really. Like, there's not a whole lot of reprint value. This is another one of those, like, Secret Lair products that, like, you really gotta want the Goshintai reprint, or you gotta want the alternate art Felidar Sovereign, or one of the like multiple ways to like win the game, because it's all about like alternate win cons, and that's what all the cards in the deck are wanting to do, is, you know, achieve one of them. So I think a lot of people also thought that something like Coalition Victory would get unbanned in time for this, but as you can see, it's just there are a few reprints, like I guess Seaborn Muse is being reprinted in here, but things like Hangerback Walker, it's sort of like confusing as to why it's in the deck list in the first place. But, you know, they just did their like standard commander reprint package, which is, Taurean Mauler and Sun Titan. And while those, like, Sun Titan is a banger, I love Sun Titan. Love me some Sun Titan. It's just, I don't know, it feels like a throwaway card that they put into all these precons that include white. So there are no shrines outside of Goshintai in the entire deck. So it's kind of a weird commander to choose for this whole thing. And I'm guessing it's just reprint value, getting people excited about the deck. It's also 5 colors, but it does not have an alternate win con just by itself. So it is something. You have tons of gates, tons of tapped lands, because you're also playing like Maze's End as one of your alternate win cons. So this is out. You can take a look at it. I'll put the link in the description. It's a really weird deck list, but there are some cool arts that I can like, I'd be like, yeah. Like Revel in Riches is getting this really cool reprint. Where is it at? Oh, come on, baby. Show it to me. Aha. Here we go. Revel in Riches. It's Kellogg's Loops doing another banger of artwork here. So it's awesome. The flavor text is awesome. This will probably be like, people probably think the Goshintai is the chase card. I think this is the chase card just based on artwork alone. I think Kellogg's Loop can get back in the cycle and do some more artwork because damn, every card they do is amazing. Just for example, look at the Mystic Remora that they made. Did I forget? We have tokens. They're on screen right now. You can check them out. You can join our Discord server. Reach out to Menace on the Discord server. Get your hands on some. Let's see. Also, Nyagai gonna do. Willie send us peeps. All of that Mockstar stuff. Home in the mid-range mindset. The naughty boys of cardboard. Without further ado, today's episode might be a little short because I don't have, you know, all this little banter and wittiness to like bounce off of Flash, but we're gonna give it a shot and go right into Shalai and Halar. So the thing with this deck, if you guys are unfamiliar with Shalai and Halar, it's 4 total mana, 1 a green, red, and a white for an Angel Elf, legendary creature, 3/3 with flying, vigilance, and whenever one or more +1/+1 counters are put on a creature you control, Shalai and Halar deals that much damage to target opponent. So, surface value, this card kind of sucks, right? It doesn't do anything on entry. It requires instigation to pop off. Shalai and Halar is like this really weird engine. And when it first dropped, I think what happened was that people saw like all the combos, like right away they were saying like, oh my God, Red Terror and Shalai and Halar like combo off immediately. Like it's a 2-card combo. So the Red Terror is whenever a red source you control deals damage to one or more permanents and or players, put a +1/+1 counter on the Red Terror. So when you land the Red Terror and you have Shalai and Halar on the battlefield, Shalai and Halar, all they have to do is swing and boom, a red source is dealt damage. The Red Terror is going to see that, put a +1/+1 counter on itself. Shalai and Halar will see that you've put a +1/+1 counter on a creature you control and it will deal damage to target opponent. Shalai and Halar is a red source, so the Red Terror sees that, puts a +1/+1 counter on itself, and now you can start to see the loop where now Shalai and Halar sees that +1/+1 counter again, deals the damage. Red Terror sees that, and then Shalai and Halar sees the counter. Bada bing, bada boom. Like instant 2-card combo. So that is the upside of playing Shalai and Halar, is that you have access to at least 1 2-card combo. Now, it just goes and it gets even better when you realize you have 2 2-card combos that pair perfectly with your commander. And so the other 2-card combo with Shalai and Halar is Heliod, Suncrowned. For 2 and a white, you get a legendary enchantment creature, God, that has indestructible as a 5/5 and isn't a creature unless your devotion is 5 or more for white. And then whenever you gain life, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature or enchantment you control, and then you can pay 1 and a white, another target creature gains lifelink until end of turn. So all you have to do, activate Heliod, doesn't matter if it's a creature or not, to give Shalai and Halar lifelink. It deals damage. Whenever you gain life, because it has lifelink, you're going to put a +1/+1 counter on Shalai and Halar. So then Shalai and Halar sees that you put a +1/+1 counter on a creature you control. It deals damage to target opponent. It has lifelink. Boom. Gain a life. Put another counter on Shalai and Halar. Deal another damage. You gain that life. Boom, 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 boom. Machine gun the table and you win. I have always been an enchantment player, an enchantress player. So that's sort of like the spirit behind the deck, is that even before this, I was playing like Zakama as a CDH option. And we'll have to circle back to that, because I also think that has legs now that I've, you know, I've had enough reps with that as well. So Shalind Hilar is sort of a branch from that deck, because I had no problem generating mana like in those decks, and I had no problem locking the board down. So I took what I was able to learn from that experience and put it here. So this is a light stacks variant. A lot of Shalind Hilar decks, all they want to do is stacks the board out until they get to the combo. So just there are some creature tutors. Yes, there are some ways to get to like the Red Terror and whatnot, but they just stumble into it. And so they play things like Collector Oof, which I did have in the list up until not too long ago. But now that Dockside's gone, I don't really have to worry so much about artifacts. So I took it out of the list. I don't think it's necessary anymore. So there are other stacks pieces that are more relevant as the meta develops. So I've included those as well. And I'll go over those when we get into creatures. But right away, we're going into battles. We have Invasion of Gobakan, which is amazing. It's one in a white that is hand disruption. You get to look at target player when it enters. You give it to somebody, and then it allows you to look at target opponent's hand and select a card, non-land card, out of it, and then it costs two more to cast. So it puts it into exile. The thing about this is that when I look in people's hands when I'm playing this card, I don't take counterspells normally unless I'm going for the win like that turn and I suspect they have something. But early in the game, when I drop this, I'm just taking something that is better left to be, or that is better for public information. And then I can also look that player in the eye throughout the course of the game and be like, I know you have that counterspell. This is the moment to use it. And I've done that multiple times where I use politics to my advantage after looking at a player's hand to like help our navigation, like to help navigate through the game. So Invasion of Gobakan has upside in knowing what an opponent has, giving table public information. And then because it has three defense counters on it, one attack from Shalind Hilar will get through and allow you to flip it into an enchantment, which says at the beginning of your end step, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature that attacked this turn. Relevant. And it also says sacrifice Light Shield Array. Creatures you control gain hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. So protection for your commander, for your strategy, is right here on an enchantment that will likely trigger something else that is also happening on the battlefield when it enters. So Invasion of Gobakan, super underrated in white, or at least it's a great card in white, especially for this build. I'm also playing Invasion of Ikoria. Since my commander is a two-card combo with non-human creatures, it's pretty great, right? As long as I have the mana, I can go get the thing and play it and win the game. So it's also a great way to search out a Walking Ballista and just throw it right into the graveyard for two green mana, which I'll show you some of the combo lines with this updated deck list that allow us to win outside of the commander. That is becoming more critical and more important as we move forward as CDH players, is like politics, mind games, all of that come into play, especially with like Shalind Hilar, which is broadcasting what it wants to do. So when you put it down in the command zone, people go, ah, Red Terror, Heliod, got to watch out for those two. Boom, those are the two card combos. So you have to be able to win through other means. Now, Walking Ballista on its own is a combo piece with Heliod. So it's another two card combo that just exists within the 99. Heliod raises some question marks because, you know, as soon as it comes down, if Shalind Hilar is not on the battlefield, they know, oh, all that Menace has to do is play Shalind Hilar, and then the combo will happen and I will lose the game. And so they hold their interaction for that. So you have to find ways to navigate through the game and potentially win without your commander. And Walking Ballista is another way to do that. And there's even more lines with it as we'll go down into the list. Right away, Dorks. As we get into creatures, Dorks, Avacyn's Pilgrim, Birds of Paradise. Delighted Halfling is just a wonderful, wonderful card, especially here because your legendary spell can't be countered. So things like Shalind Hilar, boom, you're going to land. Heliod's legendary. The Red Terror is legendary. Boom. Just like easy, 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 easy include right here. Esper Sentinel, card draw, unparalleled, Mother of Runes. This is for protection purposes, and I've thought about like pulling it multiple times, but it's won me too many games. So right now I'm at the point where I'm kind of on the edge, but it's just still so good. And well, yeah, in this build in particular, Ragavan, I used to say it's the best mana dork in the game, but it's not anymore. Deathrite Shaman has surpassed it, but Ragavan is still very, very good early game. It's not very good late game. The benefit that it does have here in this deck is that it is a red source that can deal damage without putting your other pieces in danger. So Shalayan Halar or the Red Terror, you know, like the Red Terror wants to see red sources deal damage. So Ragavan does that. You can dash it out. If you don't have haste, if you're able to get like, if you're able to basically get Shalayan Halar out and then Eldritch or Pod into your Red Terror, you already have like a Ragavan on the battlefield. This is something that is going to like be able to, or you're going to dash Ragavan out or whatever, has haste, deals the damage, starts the loop. So it's in there. It has upside. It's just good in red generically. So, and it creates an artifact. So there's a lot that goes on with it. It has a lot of versatility here. This is one of the questionable stacks pieces that I think everyone will look at the list and say like, what are you doing? You're just, you know, you're cheating stuff onto the battlefield too. What's wrong with you? Now hear me out. Containment Priest, one in a white, flash, 2/2, that says if a non-token creature would enter the battlefield and it wasn't cast, exile it instead. Has a very unique interaction with one of our two-card combos. So if you're cheating things out, if you're looking to do that, let's say you have Containment Priest on the battlefield after flashing it in, stopping a Displacer Kitten, stopping a Kinnan player from popping off. Like, that is the upside, right? Because as we look at, like, here on screen on YouTube, I have the CDH metagame breakdown for the last month, the conversion rate. And everything is basically running, or like everything that is proving to be most successful in conversion rate, Teom, Glarb, Rograk, Thrasios, Kenrith, let's see, Kinnan, you know, a few of those things, they cheat creatures onto the battlefield just as often as we do. So it's worthwhile to have this as a stacks piece because, one, you can sit back on interaction, flash it out, and then, like, protect the game essentially and keep it rolling. It's also another piece that certain decks have to play around, and it might give you just enough time to be able to convert yourself into winning. So Containment Priest is here because when you go and you tutor for Heliod is a legendary enchantment creature god. So you're playing in this list, I'm playing a lot of like Invasion to Ikoria, cheat creatures straight to the battlefield type effects. So Eldritch Evolution, Finale of Devastation. I'm even playing Birthing Pod, but I still have Containment Priest in the list. Why would I do that? Because Heliod, when you go and cheat it out, as long as your devotion to white is not 5 or greater, it doesn't enter as a creature. It still qualifies as a creature when you go tutor it, but when it enters, it is not a creature. It is an enchantment. And as long, yeah, like you said, as long as your devotion to 5 is not there, people will let, if you have Containment Priest on the battlefield, people will let that shit slide. They'll be like, Containment Priest is on the battlefield, and you're going to activate Birthing Pod? Yeah, dude, go right ahead, you idiot. And then you go grab Heliod, and they go, oh, I understand now. It's too late. I can't do anything about it. Good game. Like, that is the loop here. It's the... unless players know exactly what you're doing or what you're going for, a lot of time they'll let the Invasion of Ikoria slide in the face of a Containment Priest because they think you're an idiot. But you're more clever than that. So Heliod allows you, as one of your two card combos, to be tutored out even through a Containment Priest. So while it holds down the game in other ways, Containment Priest is also there to sort of create confusion. Destiny Spinner, amazing. Creature enchantment spells you control can't be countered. This helps protect your lines, of course. Dranith, if you're in white, beautiful. Fear of Missing Out is a new card from Duskmourne that, well, it is a combo piece in and of itself with Kiki Jiki. But for one in a red, when it enters the battlefield, discard a card, then draw a card. Whenever it attacks for the first time each turn, if there are four or more card types among cards in your graveyard, untap target creature. After this phase, there's an additional combat phase. So the combo with Kiki Jiki here with Fear of Missing Out is that you attack with it, you untap the Kiki Jiki, you tap, create another version of it, and it has haste. You go into your second combat, you swing with the new one, and then start the process all over again, right? So you swing with the new one, you untap the Kiki Jiki, create a copy, then you have a new one. It's the first time it's attacked this turn. As long as you have Delirium, you're going to have infinite combats and infinite damage because you activate, and once this swings, it's an attack trigger. It's not when it deals combat damage. So when it attacks, you untap the Kiki Jiki. So you create a copy before it's even blocked and then go into your second combat. Boom. It's infinite damage. It doesn't work. Like, your opponent can have as many creatures out as possible. You're having infinite combats and your attacks are what, yeah, cause a trigger. So Fear of Missing Out, Kiki Jiki, just another combo inside the 99. This is also an enchantment creature. So it'll trigger things like Citizen Champion, which Citizen Champion, when another enchantment enters, put a +1/+1 counter on it and draw a card. So this is an engine in a deck that we're running, I think, 25 enchantments. So there's plenty to be had here. The next card, Flameskull Celebrant. This is another stacks piece that is, irrelevant to anything other than Naya and Boros. So one in a red, Human Shaman 2/1, that whenever an opponent activates an ability that isn't a mana ability, Flameskull Celebrant deals 1 damage to that player. On the flip side, when it's in your hand, it is also Revel in Silence, which is a white instant. Your opponents can't cast spells or activate Planeswalker loyalty abilities this turn. Boom. Protection against Sisse and many other things. You know, it's like it stops Sisse decks from working through silence effects as well. So the thing with it is that it is an additional hurdle. This isn't something that locks the game down completely. But when we look at what the meta is presenting to us, Magda, Thrasios is everywhere. Like, if you're watching on YouTube right now, it's 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 Thrasios decks in the top 8 of most successful decks in the past month. So Thrasios, or infinite mana into Thrasios, now that Dockside isn't present and Mana Crypt isn't present, stuff like that, this is proving to be a pretty successful strategy. So you love to see it. You love now that you can include cards like Flamescroll Celebrant and just have players pump the brakes for a second, because they're going to have to find an answer to it. Otherwise, it will just kill them. And oftentimes, just that enough of like going off the beaten path creates an opportunity to extend the game. So while they might have to go out of their way to deal with the Flamescroll Celebrant before it kills them, it also gives the other two opponents a chance to interact when they go for the Celebrant. So that's why it's included. That's another way to, basically keep opponents off their win, even if they have to hesitate for a moment, but also on the backside, if it gets bounced to your hand or whatever through some mass Cyclonic Rift or like board wipe thing, Revel in Silence is there to protect the game as well. So it has additional purpose outside of just stopping 3 or 4 of the most popular decks currently in the meta. Goblin Engineer here. This is a new inclusion at the deck as it continues to evolve. But Goblin Engineer, now that Dockside is not here, I'm not scared to lean further into permanence that'll stick around on the battlefield. So when it enters, you may search your library for an artifact and put it into the graveyard. And then it has pay a red, tap it, sacrifice an artifact, return target artifact with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. So the big thing here is that you're going to be throwing one of your, you know, like Goblin Engineer can throw Agatha's Soul Cauldron or Walking Ballista into the graveyard. And then you have multiple ways to be able to win with those artifacts when you return them to the battlefield. The big line here is like Molten Duplication. So you can
run the Goblin Engineer in a Molten duplication, and then pay a red, sacrifice the Molten duplicate copy, and then get that artifact, that one of the two artifacts that you just threw into the graveyard, onto the battlefield and start your line, start your combo. So you can throw both Walking Ballista and Soul Cauldron into the graveyard. The cool thing about this is that the Red Terror actually wins the game through the Soul Cauldron lines with Walking Ballista. So all it does is deal a damage itself, sees that, gives itself a counter, boom, 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 boom. Another combo within the 99. Woo! Magebane Lizard. This is another protector for your combo. So one in a red, whenever a player casts a non-creature spell, Magebane Lizard deals damage to that player equal to the number of non-creature spells they've cast this turn. This stops Underworld Breach lines. This also protects the win when you're going for it with the Red Terror. So Shalion Hallara is down. Magebane Lizard's been sitting there for a few turns. Red Terror comes down, preferably uncountered, there, you know, if there's a way to protect it. But as soon as it lands, your opponent thinks about interacting with you. Magebane Lizard is there to have your back because the trigger will go on the stack, it'll deal damage, and the loop will start without you even needing to move to combat. There's another card in here like that that I really enjoy. That's an enchantment. We'll get down to it. Sanctum Weaver generates a ton of mana here. Fear of missing out, being one of the enchantment creatures itself, Destiny Spinner. We also have Kallax in the list for plus one counter synergies and to create additional enchantments, as you'll see down below. And yeah, we have a few other creatures in the list that are just there to like help protect, be overall just really great engines and pieces to interact with the board. Like Dualcaster Mage is one of the most slept on creatures in red. It's one and two red for a 2/2 with flash that we all know it has combo potential with things like Molten Duplication, which are in the list. So another combo, but it can also stop counter spells. It can stop a player from interacting with you because it enters, copies the counter spell, and targets the original. So boom, Dualcaster Mage, super underrated. Absolutely love the card. It can also be copied with something like Kiki Jiki so that you can, you know, instant speed copy, you know, an instant that's on the board. It's essentially a one-time Wandering Archaic trigger that you get. It's pretty rad. I love Dualcaster Mage, and ever since it's been being played more and more by people in the Pacific Northwest that are in red, but it is just for me now an auto include since, you know, I realized I can copy an ad nauseum, and in this list it just helps me get far enough. So I absolutely love it here. Super good, super versatile. Endurance, keep the game going. Kutsiu, I'm not really a Grand Abolisher fan, but I do like Kutsiel for the ability to be able to tutor it out. It just works better with pod lines, with evolution lines, stuff like that. It's also not a human, so I can go get it with Invasion of Ikoria. Ranger Captain of Eos lets you go grab the Walking Ballista, as well as a couple other dorks or card draw options like Esper Sentinel. Citizen Champion, like I said, is a great engine here since we're running so many enchantments and it has additional +1/+1 counter synergies. The Red Terror, two card combo, and Kiki Jiki. As we continue on, we're going to go to sorceries. Faithless Looting is here to help load the grave, but also instigate additional card draw since that's something that Naya always seems to struggle with. Also the additional flashback. It just allows you to dig deeper for a relatively cheap cost. So I'm all about Faithless Looting, especially when you're starting to run combos that feed from the grave with Walking Ballista, Agatha Soul Cauldron, Goblin Engineer, stuff of the like. Finale of Devastation. There is not really a way to generate infinite mana here, so this is just really great value. It is not a win condition in this deck unless you are going for, you know, Heliod or the Red Terror. So you love to see it. It's a really great card. I've loved it since it came out. The original artwork's the best artwork. Sorry, all you extended art fans. This one's the best. Molten Duplication. This is now a really cool card to just almost auto include into Dualcaster. You know, it's really great. You get additional ETB effects with cards that have already landed. So let's say like Fear of Missing Out, you know, I'm not going to get like the combo to pop off, but it then turns Fear of Missing Out into, you know, like discard, draw another card, get a little deeper. It turns, you know, gives you another Mother of Ruins. If you're really looking for that extra protection, it's just a really good card that has additional ceiling on top of being a combo piece and then also helping instigate like Goblin Engineer lines. Eldritch Evolution, this allows you to, you know, jump from a Mind Sensor into a Kiki Jiki to win the game. All right, instance. This is when the game becomes fun. This is interaction is the best part of Magic. It's the best part of CDH, and you need a ton of it. So that's kind of what I'm doing with this deck, is I'm trying to like create a board state that is hard to navigate through that helps players walk right into my interaction. And if you played with me over in MagicCon, you would have noticed that, because I would just sit back and pass the turn and just love it, because playing off your back foot is oftentimes more successful. When you're playing to not lose, you give yourself more opportunities to win. So right away, crop rotation. This is just, I find now that I have a hard time squeaking into lists, but it has been here since the inception of this deck. It's just too good to go get a Sarah's Sanctum or a Gaia's Cradle, since I'm running 27 creatures and, you know, 20 something enchantments. So whichever one gets off to a hotter start, I'm going to go search that land and then help push myself forward even further. Usually Sarah's Sanctum, since it works a lot better with Heliod, I find that the Heliod line versus the Red Terror line is far safer to walk. But crop rotation is great here. Enlightened Tutor, it goes to get one of your combo pieces. Also allows you to roll into stacks pieces or interaction that you wouldn't otherwise, you know, that you need in the moment. So Final Showdown, big fan of instant speed board wipes. Holla. I love this stuff. Like, it also protects your board if you have enough mana. This is that whole play off your back foot mentality. If you know you can't jump and pursue the win in that given moment or in your turn, then sit on it. Sit on this. Like, pass a turn, you have a ton of mana. Like, great. Your opponent's going to think twice about working through whatever is in your hand and all the mana that you represent. So Final Showdown's great to just holster. And then, because most combos, I would say now in the current meta, are creature based, sitting back and waiting to see what happens is oftentimes the best thing to do. Final Showdown allows you to do that and interact with the board state while also protecting if you have enough mana. It also it says all creatures lose all abilities until end of turn. So it also has that for 2 mana to protect the game, or you can go for 6 mana to wipe the board. Hadouken! Lightning Bolt's just too good. It's also a red source that deals damage, so the Red Terror loves it. Path to Exile, Unconditional Removal, you love to see it. Red Elemental Blast, protect your wins. Veil of Summer, I'm only running Veil of Summer in combo decks that include green. That's it. I'm no longer running Veil of Summer in generic value builds that include green or whatever, like card advantage engines. I'm only running it with extremely explosive combos. It's not that good anymore. It's just not. It's not an auto include. You need it to protect if you're going for more aggressive. If you're taking a more aggressive stance and you're going for explosive wins, Veil of Summer is great. If you're not, if you're trying to generate advantage over the course of the game, Veil of Summer is not great. It just doesn't do enough. Worldly Tutor goes to get your combo pieces, also helps you find stacked pieces. Now, here's where it gets that I love. Now, this card, all of you podcast listeners, you don't know what it is. All you YouTube watchers, I've been hovering over it for now 30 seconds. It's Dromoka's Command. In Selesnya, in Naya, this card rips. I think it's one of the best pieces of interaction currently in the meta, where for a green and a white at instant speed, you get to choose 2. Prevent all damage target instant or sorcery spell would deal this turn. Pretty much irrelevant. Target player sacrifices an enchantment. Incredibly relevant. Put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. Incredibly relevant in this deck. target creature you control fights target creature you don't control. Relevant. There are three modes that are incredibly relevant. There might be an instance where the first mode becomes relevant, but you get to choose two. So, one, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. That, in itself, triggers Shalayan Halar, which can start the loop. Target creature you control fights target creature you don't control. This allows for removal. Since you're mostly a creature-based deck, it also having removal is wonderful, but probably the most relevant like line of text that you're going to use is the target player sacrifices an enchantment. So while you do get to pick two, that one comes up the most often since Underworld Breach is still very much a relevant line in the meta. And then you can also get rid of like Rhystic Studies, Mystic Remoras, Smothering Ties, Trouble in Pairs, things like that, where enchantments aren't a super popular card type, but the best card draw engines exist in enchantment land. And now, you know, since Underworld Breach has been, you know, out and in the meta, it is also one of the, like, enchantments also present one of the more common win cons. So Necropotence is also there, like, as, you know, for other decks, but Dromoka's Command allows you to answer those incredibly popular cards that oftentimes are kept in people's first hands because, like, they help recover for like really aggressive starts. So Dromoka's Command allows you to sort of like stick your finger in strategies and then also instigate strategy, your own strategy, and then also be a form of removal. So you can have target player sacrifice an enchantment and a creature you control fights another target creature. So potentially two pieces of removal in one card for two mana. It's awesome. Elodomri's Call. Amazing. You love to see it. It pulls a Walking Ballista to your hand. It pulls all of the pieces you might need to your hand. Dual Caster Mage. Boom. You're sitting on a ton of mana. Elodomri's Call into Dual Caster Mage. Still, while the stack is there, cast a Dual Caster Mage. Copy whatever it is. It's too good not to include, especially in creature-based shells. It's Court of Calling. It doesn't need a lot. Cheats a creature onto the battlefield at instant speed. Force of Vigor for those enchantment removal pieces, and then also artifact removal. Now, there isn't a whole lot of artifact removal in the deck. It's just when Force of Vigor is good, it's really, really good. Deflecting Swat, because your combo usually relies on your commander. So drop your commander, sit on this, go for your win. All right, artifacts. Now that I'm talking about like artifact combo loops, you know, you realize, man, you're only running 7 artifacts. I don't think you need more than that. So Chromox, Mana Vault, Soul Ring, Arcane Signet, the One Ring. 5 artifacts that are just pretty much relevant in any deck. It doesn't matter what you're playing. And then you have things like, and then I have the two additions here, which are Agatha's Soul Cauldron, which is just really good in this deck because the +1/+1 counter, not only that, but giving a creature an activated ability, like we talked about with Walking Ballista, allows you to pursue additional lines that that are available in the deck. So it's a disgusting card. It's super good. It interacts with graveyards, so you can pull things at instant speed as people go for wins. Like now with Glarb, there's people are now putting Doomsday piles together that include like Dread Return. So Agatha's Soul Cauldron is a wonderful option there to pull the Thassa's Oracle out of the graveyard or whatever. I think that we already talked about Glarb on a previous episode. You can check that out 2 weeks ago or whatever. I'll put it in the description. I'll put it in the link in the description below. But I think the Thassa's Oracle line is one of the weaker lines. I think it's just it's a good inclusion, but I do think the Jace line or Labman line is actually a little bit stronger than Thassa's Oracle and Dread Return. It's just too easy to interact with. So especially when Agatha's Soul Cauldron is out there and about, especially in like Kenrith builds, which as we can see, Kenrith is the number 8 most successful deck in the current meta in the last month. So that being said, also running Birthing Pod, because you can pod your commander into a Kiki Jiki and win the game that way. You can also pod one of your 3 drops. The curve here is immaculate, right? So I have 1-0 drop in the Walking Ballista, but then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 ones. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 twos. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 threes, and then a 4 and a 5. So the ability, basically, for you to be able to pod into the Red Terror or to pod into Heliod is incredibly high. So that's why I decided to like morph and warp the deck around a little bit, because before it was very stacks heavy, Collector, Oof, Stony Silence. But now that I've played a few like games out there in the wild, I'm realizing that without Dockside, people are pursuing like those artifact lines less frequently. So there's not really a point in running Collector Oof if you're not trying, you know, like it just doesn't lock the game down in the same way that it used to. So I've foregone that and I've put Birthing Pod in here, and I think it has provided more opportunities to win than it has provided more opportunities to not lose, right? Because Collector Oof would present you that, right? It would be like, okay, Collector Oof is down, they're, you know, I'm not going to lose this go around. Birthing Pod actually pushes you forward a little bit faster, so you can pursue the win and also not lose a little bit faster than you would if you were trying to slow the game down. The One Ring, great card draw engine, especially in Naya, colors that struggle with card draw. Now, enchantments, always my favorite section. Authority of the Consoles just got reprinted. I've been playing it for a long time. It's a one mana enchantment that boosts your Sarah Sanctum, boosts your Sanctum Weaver, but then also creatures your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, you gain one life. I've won with this card in a weird way in the past, but the first thing that I will note is that it does stop other players' Kiki Jiki lines, which is also becoming more relevant. Authority of the Consoles is there to help prevent Kiki Jiki lines, but then the line where it says a creature enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, you gain one life. Well, one of my two pieces actually cares about gaining life, and that's Heliod. Whenever you gain life, you get to put a +1/+1 counter on something. So if an opponent would have a creature enter the battlefield, you gain a life, right? I've won the game in this deck by sitting on putting the combo down with no way to generate haste or anything like that, so I can't deal damage with Shalai and Halar, but I have an untapped Forbidden Orchard, you know, two mana available to activate with Authority of the Consoles, and I've tap the Forbidden Orchard to give a creature to a player. It generates a life, and then I use the mana to activate Heliod, and then I won the game. So it's really great. It's another one of those hurdles that your opponents will have to work through, but think is generally like pretty safe. Like, it'll just take me an extra turn. That's all the time you need. An extra turn. So for one mana, it's a really great rate and also helps you, push higher life total. Carpet of Flowers, I think in every green deck, you can now pretty much bank on it. Deafening Silence, this is a potential cut in the future. I don't know. Still waiting to see. It does stop and prevent certain decks from popping off. But I'm also trying to like draw multiple cards per turn. And if a Deafening Silence is down with Citizen Champion, I'm really only getting one. So we'll see how long it makes it. If I can find a way to move faster without it, then I will probably abandon it. We have Seal of Fire, which you would think, why? Why are you playing this? Oh, and you're considering cutting Deafening Silence? Seal of Fire is amazing, okay? So get off my back. It's one red mana for an enchantment that says sacrifice it, deal 2 damage to any target. So it's a red source that deals damage, so you can sit on it. It also kills more than half the creatures that are present in most meta decks. So Seal of Fire is one card that when it enters, you know, Citizen Champion again, you potentially draw a card, but the 2 damage is relevant. It sits there. It can hit anything. It has proven to be a better... people have stolen it from me just to use the 2 damage to kill something. So it's incredibly relevant, the 2 damages, and it feeds that enchantment count. So you can sit on it, Sarah Sanctum, whatnot. I love it a lot. Like I said, it's a red source, so Red Terror loves to see that. It helps instigate the combo that much more or that much faster. Or that, having something sit on the battlefield now that I'm not scared of Dockside is becoming more relevant. Static prison has basically proven to be a nearly permanent way to deal with a non-land permanent. So for one white mana, it enters, it gives you two energy, and then at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, you sacrifice it unless you pay an energy. The game doesn't often last three more turns, so Static Prison has, you know, basically been this really awesome way to remove something for like an incredibly low rate, but also for an extended amount of time. I think it takes longer to get your thing back than you would normally expect. So really great card there. Utopia Sprawl, Wild Growth for ramp. Bitter Reunion is also an MVP here. It's one in a red that allows you to, you know, when it enters, you can discard a card and then draw two cards. You get a little deeper. You can potentially feed the grave with this. And then you can pay one, sacrifice it. Creatures you control gain haste until end of turn. So you can drop the Shalayan Halar, pay the extra one, and swing through. Get that damage in and start the loop. Blind Obedience is too good here. Also, but the potential life gain with it. Heliod is relevant. Cinder Vines, amazing. This card rocks. This is another card. It's kind of like Dromoka's Command, where in other decks it's not quite relevant, but this in this deck it definitely is. It holds the table down. It is makes everyone play a little bit more responsibly. But for a red and a green, you get an enchantment that says whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell, Cinder Vines deals one damage to that player. That is, yep. It's in order to do Underworld Breach, you have to cast two non-creature spells in order to do it. Also, when people want to interact with you, they likely have to cast a non-creature spell, which means Cinder Vines will then deal it damage to them. So it stops a few loops from happening. It stops Hallbreaker Horror Loops, but they're just going to, you know, they can eventually just pop it. But it also has an additional line of text that says you can pay one, sacrifice Cinder Vines, destroy target artifact or enchantment, and then Cinder Vines deals two damage to that permanent's controller. This is a red and green enchantment. It's a red source. It is protection for your loop. You go for Red Terror. See, you know how I was saying earlier that like Heliod is a far safer route to walk? It is less threatening. The Red Terror and like Shalayan Halar, like you just know that those two go together. Like, and people do know about Heliod, but they're less afraid of it because it requires additional mana. The Red Terror comes down, it's game over unless you interact with it, right? So you need ways to be able to protect that response or to even protect the Heliod response. But Cinder Vines keeps players from countering your spells or casting removal, because it'll deal damage to them and it'll start the loop. It'll protect, like, yeah. And then the Red Terror will see that and start, yeah, doing the thing and then machine gun the table. But then it also has pay one, sacrifice it, destroy target artifact or enchantment. So additional removal on top of that. It sticks around. Like I said, people play around it because they just don't know when you're going to activate or what thing you're going to target. You get to choose. It's really a sleeper of a hit in this deck, and I love it, and I wouldn't play the deck without it. It's that good. Kenra's Transformation, just elking a creature while also drawing a card. Beautiful. Survival of the Fittest allows you to go tutor your creature combos. Aura of Silence. Again, this is another type of enchantment for one and two white. Artifact and enchantment spells your opponents play cost two more to play. So it slows decks down, but then it has Sacrifice, Aura of Silence, destroy target artifact or enchantment. So you can lift the gates, but in doing so, when you lift the gates, you get to remove something. It's really slept on, underappreciated, and usually grinds the game into a state that allows you to pursue the win on top of, or like in before your opponents do. Fable the Mirror Breaker, potential cut, but it also has that discard and draw two in the second phase, but then also generates mana, also generates an artifact with that Goblin Shaman as it attacks. So it gives you more fodder for your Goblin Engineer. And then when it flips, it turns into a enchantment creature that contributes to your count, but then also allows you to create copies. So there's a lot going on with this. Additional Kiki-Jiki effects are definitely welcome. Rhythm of the Wild is another way to protect your win con, because creature spells you control can't be countered, and the non-token creatures you control have Riot. So if you have one of your pieces down, let's say Heliod or the Red Terror and you go to cast Shalayan Halar, it has Riot. You can put a plus one counter on it. The ability, the trigger for the ability will go on the stack. You can activate Heliod, giving Shalayan Halar lifelink and win the game through that way. And then also through the Red Terror is like, once it enters, you just give it a plus one counter and then it just sees that and goes crazy. So Rhythm of Wild, another enchantment that is included here that protects the win, but also wins with your two card combos. Touch Spirit Realm, channel. It's too good. Also, if you cast it, Kallax can copy it, giving you additional ways to remove non-land permanent or creatures or artifacts. Trouble in Pairs, too good of a card draw engine. You love to see it. Lands are pretty straightforward. You got some fetches, definitely color fixing. Beseju, Iganjo. Not playing Sokin's On, there's no reason to, but I'm playing Guy's Cradle, Sarah's Sanctum. The Plaza of Heroes is really great since all of my combos revolve around legendary creatures. You're basically, this is a five color land for me in this build. Plus, it also gives target legendary creature hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. Incredibly relevant here. Urza Saga is an enchantment land, can boost your Sarah's Sanctum while it's still on the battlefield, and then also go ditch a you can also go get a Soul Ring ramp. I just realized right then you can't ditch a Walking Ballista since it doesn't have the cost zero. It's XX and it doesn't meet the requirements. So not possible. Now considering not let's look at a couple of test stands. As we go through here, this is something that people have been requesting from time to time for decks so they can better understand how to start the game off. So here we start the game off with one land, which is an Urza Saga, and a bunch of stuff that we just cannot cast. So we're going to mulley this. This time we end up with two lands. Aaron Mesa, Mana Confluence, Authority of the Consoles, Dranith Magistrate, Goblin Engineer, Red Terror, and Crop Rotation. So this is actually not a bad hand. I don't know if I would keep it. There's no way to generate mana beyond, like, let's say you draw a card, then you roll into Heliod, you have two of your combo pieces. So now all of your tutor to battlefield type effects are dead cards or less powerful. So I don't know if I would have kept that hand in the first place in order to see the Heliod. Let's go ahead and deal another one. This time you're here with a Wooded Foothills, a Command Tower, Sacred Foundry, Mana Vault, Goblin Engineer, Destiny Spinner, and a Birthing Pod. I might go into this and turn one Birthing Pod so I can turn two a Destiny Spinner that rolls into a way to win with Birthing Pod into a three drop. And then the Goblin Engineer is actually going to create a scenario where I can sacrifice the Mana Vault, throw the Soul Cauldron into the graveyard, and then get it back after. And then the following turn, I should be able to pull the Red Terror out after sacrificing that three drop and then start the loop with Goblin Engineer and the Cauldron and Walking Ballista if I can tutor it out. So I would keep this hand. Let's go ahead and draw a card, Containment Priest. Irrelevant, especially since you're just drawing Birthing Pod right there. Kutseal, Temple Garden. You know, it's likely that I tutor Kutseal up with the Birthing Pod, so I wouldn't actually see it. Just to, you know, continue to protect my plays. All right, yeah, that's not a bad hand. You're going to be tutoring, so you're. It's not exactly that you would see those cards as you continue drawing, because you're going to be fetching, you're going to be like searching with Goblin Engineer, and you're also going to be searching with Birthing Pod. So that was a good hand and probably allows for like a turn four win or turn three win when they're anticipating something happening later in the game. So the one thing I will say that you definitely like struggle, like this deck struggles with, is like holding the game together and winning on top of the stack. This deck doesn't have that ability. A lot of Naya decks don't. I think Rocko is maybe the one, right? When you play Gandalf or you play an ability to flash creatures out, you have, you know, the potential to win on the stack. This one doesn't, which is why you are so concerned with playing to not lose and keeping the game going. So that is one of the deck's weaknesses, is that it just doesn't have the ability to win on top. It also struggles a little bit with card draw, which is why I'm playing a lot of those like draw discard effects that don't necessarily net me cards, but it allows me to have more information and, you know, potentially use my graveyard. I this is a deck, you know, like I've said in the past, this is about the journey, not the destination. I've reached the destination multiple times with this deck. I've top 16 before with it. And I think the more that I work on it, the better it gets. So this is a very different approach to Shalai and Halar than anybody else. Like, and maybe you're out there, maybe you're thinking just like me, but you're approaching it with different lines. But all of the decks that I've seen submitted on EDH Top 16 are all just players that are crossing their fingers and hoping that the game goes long enough for them to draw into one of their combos. You can't be that guy. You're going to lose a lot of games. You got to actively pursue the win, you know? Otherwise, why are you playing CEDH? You got to actively pursue the win or actively attempt to not lose. And I think that this deck does both of those really well, even though it does lack the ability to win on the stack. So if you guys have any questions, any comments about the deck list, about the deck, how it works, feel free to leave a comment in the description or down below on YouTube. You can also leave a comment on Spotify. Ask questions there. That would be awesome too. I've been noticing we've been getting more interaction and more engagement that way. You can also jump on the Discord server, jump into the Naya channel. I'll put the deck list there and we can have a discussion there as well. So, if you like this video, make sure you like, subscribe, and stay tuned for more on YouTube. You can also find us on all major podcasting platforms. Listen there, share it with your friends, help the channel grow. You can also support us on Patreon by becoming an official Pepperhead. There are changes coming to the Patreon and how you can support the show coming in the near future, which means we are expanding the amount of content that we're creating as well. So there's a big announcement coming up. Flash and I want to be able to announce that together, so potentially next week. Really excited for that. Really, we've been putting in a little bit of work to make sure that it's a more of a value for all of our patrons. So thank you all for your support. We so appreciate it. It really fills our cup. We love you guys. Thank you so much. You can also become a Cherry Vanilla Pepperhead for $5 a month. You get 2 free entries into each of our bi-weekly giveaways. And our Cherry Vanilla Pepperheads are Will Rule, K Mr. K, UWP Quirt, Demon 82, Tommy Cypher, Jacob Hibbard, The Boogie Ghost, Pool Boy Barry, Draw for Turn, KB, Maybe Jeremy, and Maybe Anthony. So I thank you again. Somebody, thank you so much for listening, for sticking around through all of my ramblings today. Remember, we have tokens. This is the home of the mid-range mindset. Make sure you drink 2 Dr. Peppers a day to achieve the Limitless Pill status. Don Cheadle, our Lord and Savior. LeBron's Fake Family, Space Jam 2, the Tasmanian Devil. We have Reven Lift hanging out in the Mockstars Dr. Pepper Lounge. Thank you so much, Reven Lift, for your support. I hope you're enjoying your hats. You got another one coming soon. And happy holidays to everybody. I know this episode's coming out the day after Thanksgiving. I hope you're able to get together with family or just enjoy the day off, enjoy the time off. And get out there, do some Black Friday shopping. Thank you so much for listening. Peace.